that I could dig into the ground and the cliff before I could take the clumps of dirt into my altered space. Once that was filled, I had to dump the accumulated dirt a distance away and repeat the process. The good news is that my altered attributes made the manual labor tedious, not impossible. The bad news is that even with never-ending stamina, just to make this happen before the end of the day, I had to add another point to my altered space. That gave me a much larger dimensional space and gave Ali a higher degree of control over it, too. It made the work much easier, especially since I needed a pit big enough to fit 4 30-foot-long monsters. The dust-filled air when the landslide eventually stops is enough to make me cough. When I peer inside, the Zuds are still moving, attempting to climb up. I decide to put a stop to that. Ali? The spirit flies up high into the air and concentrates, pulling open my altered space right next to himself and dropping its contents inside. Stone and chopped trees rain down, smashing into the monsters. The moment the space is empty, Ali flits off to collect more while I cast my fireball spell inside to distract the monsters. We bury the Zuds alive, their bodies pounded under tons of earth and rock, unable to get enough of a purchase to climb out. When we finally get the last notification of their deaths, all that can be seen is a small depression filled with churned earth and stone. I mentally message Ali then to turn back to collect the remains of the Brotherhood. This wasn't a fight. This was an execution. I wish I could say that I'm happier, that I'm less angry, but all I feel is a caustic, churning sea of rage in my stomach. I almost wish I had fought them straight on. At least I'd have felt a little better. Chapter 13. By the time I get back, it's mid-afternoon of the next day. The guards at the wall nod at me, only one of them looking slightly startled. Halfway down the stretch of road to the city, I'm met by a hunter who drives me the rest of the way and drops me off at the reclaimed Quanlin Dunn Cultural Center. I leave the bodies to their people before I walk to the city center and the shop. Gods, but I'm tired. I don't bother with haggling or arguing, instead sending the spirit, who never seems tired, to deal with it. I crash on the lounge chair, eyes half closed, but soon enough I get bored. I pull out another of my books, happy enough to catch up on my light reading. Others might find window shopping in the shop interesting, but I've never liked it. Tempting myself with what I can't afford just seems like a waste of time. Picking up adventuring equipment, the credits for fixing up Saber, and the skills that I could use in the future, Ali and I have this mapped out. The rest? Well, the rest is teasing. Mana allocation and the development of monsters in dungeons. The voice is relaxed, cultured, and familiar. As I look up, I see a pair of shapely legs in tight black pants with silver piping and a vest and tunic ensemble in the same design encasing a well-muscled, toned body. Dark skin, tipped ears, and silver hair complete the portrait of a very handsome Trinar noble.
Not your regular reading, he says.
Lord Roxley. My lips twist in a light smile, a part of me happy to see him. The last time we met, he was lecturing me on my many mistakes. Since then, he's been a no-show in the city. Where have you been?
Away. I have had to deal with some of the issues from the Yerrick's arrival in person, Roxley says, and I frown. Our first major batch of colonists having their buildings destroyed has not been particularly good for my recruitment efforts. I have been attempting to attract others.
Others? I frown. You're trying to bring in more people?
Of course. The city is not sustaining itself currently, cannot sustain itself, certainly not before the deadline. When the system is fully online, when the dungeon world is created, we must be ready.
You're talking in riddles again, I grumble as I stand, dropping the book back into my inventory.
Perhaps if your reading was a little more practical, Roxley says, shaking his head, not so esoteric.
I like what I'm reading. My eyes narrow. Anyway, I used to have someone who was willing to explain the more mundane.
Used to.
Roxley tilts his head and sighs, stepping forward to close the distance.
I was not the one who left first.
I open my mouth, suddenly finding it dry as he closes on me. I stare at his shoulders, then upward, shaking my head.
Roxley, what's ready?
A corner of his lips tug up in a well-remembered movement. Still, he answers me.
White Horse must have, at the very least, a stable safe zone. Without it, none but the desperate will visit us.
Is that so bad? Seems like it's not a bad idea to have the tourists ignore us.
You're so ignorant, John, Roxley says, heat rising in his voice. Already boss monsters and dungeons appear around the city constantly. My guards have had to deal with one swarm. Soon the monster population will grow too great and the city will be overrun. Without a steady stream of adventurers, the city will fall. Your people have been unable to stabilize the mana flows through your own efforts. I have attempted, I am attempting, to draw others to us. But we are not the only city in need of immigrants, and the actions of your council do not aid me in this.
You're saying things are going to get worse, I murmur, and he nods.
Have you not seen it already?
Yes, I sigh.
We have an opportunity. The city has an opportunity. We have a large population and the most proximate locations to a series of high-level zones. However, none of that will matter if we do not stabilize the city and upgrade the city itself.
Roxley's voice softens as he continues.
If there is no improvement, my efforts, my methods will be considered a failure.
Then what? I frown, hearing the threat of worry in his voice.
Then others of my kind, or worse, will take over. Their methods will be harsher, more inclined to use the galactic population than mine.
I blink at Roxley, my mind racing with the implications of his words. Hints from conversations with the Yerrick and Ali give me a bleak picture of what harsher methods might be in store. Still.
Why tell me? Why now? Why here, for that matter? I am currently not on Earth. Accessing this particular shop version allowed me to speak with you directly now, here.
Roxley sighs. As for why you... Perhaps I believe that you may affect some change in this city of yours. Mostly I do not wish you to misunderstand my actions in the future.
I grunt, staring at him. Why? What does it matter what I think?
You know why, Roxley says. His hand twitches at his side almost as if he meant to do something with it, then decided against it. Considering his control, I wonder what it was.
It has been good speaking with you, John. However, I have other things to attend to.
That's it? Drop some information and go?
Yes, I am pressed for time now. I but grasped the opportunity that was presented to me.
Roxley's voice is laced with meaning, one that I choose to ignore. Damn pretty elf. I will make up my own mind at my own pace. With one last mocking bow, Roxley turns and walks away. He isn't even two steps away before he fades, leaving me with new knowledge and an ache of loneliness.
Gods, but I'm tired.
It's easy to tell when Lana is back. The fox, Anna, always appears first, gliding into the backyard and its den. With Richard, it's Aurel who makes his appearance first. Anna never pays any attention to me, always sliding into her den without a single sound. I would almost think that she dislikes me, except that I haven't been burnt or bitten yet. Lana follows with the puppies, finding me sprawled under a tree in the back of our house, staring at the dark, fluffy clouds. They suit my mood, cold and gloomy with the temperature probably hovering around zero.
John?
Here. I move a hand to dump scattered candy wrappers into my inventory. No need for her to see me being a slob, not when it requires so little effort. She comes around the corner, red hair bouncing on her shoulders and purple eyes tight with concern. I blink, tilting my head as I check my memory and realize, yes, she did get a haircut.
John!
Lana's voice sharpens for a moment and I blink, staring at her.
Yes? You weren't answering.
Oh, just thinking. Did you get a haircut? The moment I say it, she preens slightly, puffing out her generous chest and smiling.
Yes. Do you like it? No. Wait. Are you okay?
I do, and I'm fine. All in one piece. I wave down at my body, smiling. Didn't even need to get regenerated to make that true. She frowns, squatting next to me. One of her puppies, Lexi, slides in under her hand to steady her while she speaks.
Jim told me about the brothers. About Rachel. And you?
Easy peasy. I answer her unasked question, my eyes absently tracking down her figure before resting on her jeans-clad knees. There's a tear in one of them, showing off pale, smooth skin. I blink when her hand comes down on my arm, making me look up.
Flattering as it might be another time, that's just creepy right now. Zombie eyes aren't sexy, Lana says, and I flush slightly. You should go rest.
I'm fine. Stamina's full. Lana snorts, not at all feminine-like, before sitting fully.
You know that isn't what I meant.
Lana picks up a candy wrapper I missed, raising one graceful eyebrow. I'm just a little tired. Only so much the system can do. I finally relent, leaning back against the tree and staring at the sky. Lana falls silent, waiting patiently.
We keep dying. All the time. Melissa, Nicodemus, the brothers. We keep dying.
I know.
There's sympathy in Lana's voice, in her eyes, as she squeezes my arm. I stare into her eyes and drown in them and realize how stupid I'm being. Stupid. I was the one doing the comforting a short time ago, and now here I am. I close my eyes, drawing a breath as I work on pushing it down, putting the emotions away. No, I'm not doing this. I can't do this. Ow! I glare at Lexi, who has nipped my hand. She must have put quite some force into it to get through my health points.
Stop that!
Lana waves a finger at my face before pointing at the sword I have in my hand without realizing it.
I told her to bite you.
Why? I huff, putting the sword away.
Pinching you doesn't work, and you're being an idiot again. I can literally see you repressing your emotions.
This time, I don't run or fight her. Maybe because I'm too tired, or maybe because I've gotten closer to accepting that repression all the damn time is a bad idea.
I am not.
Just because I'm closer doesn't mean I'm not going to argue.
Right, because that churning ball of rage and the gritted teeth are normal.
It is for me, I sigh. And I'm fine the way I am.
The hell you are, Ali butts in. You're about one good hit away from going on another run.
He's right, you know. And we need you sane and healthy, you idiot,
Lana says before squeezing my hand.
Sane and healthy? I shake my head. I don't think any of us are that sane. Not anymore.
Speak for yourself, boyo.
Lana shoots a look at Ali, who subsides before she nods slowly.
Saner, then.
I snort and fall silent before I exhale roughly. I don't want to be needed. I don't want the responsibility.
Then you can walk away,
Lana points out.
But I'd be disappointed.
Do you want to?
I don't know, I answer truthfully.
Gods, I wish I could say I wanted to be the hero. The man who stands up for everyone, who holds the line no matter the cost. Except it's easy to say you want to be that man. Easy, maybe, to do it the first time, until you see the cost. The lives you failed to save. The monsters you let escape. The failures that pile on you and whisper their regrets. In the end, I find myself saying bitterly, it doesn't matter anyway. I'm no Superman. Doesn't matter what happens. They keep dying. At this rate, we'll all be dead soon enough.
You know I'm going to be an aunt, right?
Lana says, and I nod slightly.
3 times over, actually. But my brother hasn't been the only one trying to repopulate the Earth. Nearly 2/3 of the women in town are pregnant.
2/3? I blink, my mind going over my memories recently. Well, that'd explain the recent number of non-combat citizens wearing dresses and loose tops. Still, 2/3?
Oh, yeah,
Lana smiles slightly.
Less in the hunters, of course, but they're mostly made up of men anyway. There is a future, John, and it's coming in about 4 months.
I nod slowly, eyes tracking over the clouds again. 4 months and hundreds of mewling babies will appear in this world, in a city that isn't safe, that hasn't gotten itself organized, where monsters swarm and bosses and dungeons grow. I shudder and realize it has nothing to do with the cold. As I think that, the first snowflake drops in front of my eyes.
Roxley says it'll get worse soon, I say.
Lana nods as more snow falls, faster and faster.
It always can. But it's getting better, too. We're rebuilding. Slowly, perhaps. But we're rebuilding.
Lana squeezes my hand.
We just need a little more time.
Time. I watch a snowflake drop onto our hands and melt.
Time for bed. Come on.
Lana tugs on my hand, and I frown as she stands and leans back, pulling me off the ground.
You need some rest.
I'm not sure I can sleep, I answer truthfully, and she smiles.
Then I'll sit with you until you do.
Inside and out of this snow. She drags me in while still holding my hand. Behind us, the first snowfall of the autumn arrives. John? Richard's eyes narrow as I walk in with Lana for breakfast the next morning. He blinks, looking between the two of us, probably searching for and not finding Ali. Truth be told, I'm curious where the little spirit is gone, but I'm mostly enjoying the peace and quiet.
What?
Finally! Richard shakes his head and turns back to his cereal.
Nothing happened,
I splutter, realizing what he's saying. Mikito titters at my reaction while Lana just grabs a bowl, smacking her brother on the top of the head when she gets near him.
Yeah, right. I can smell her on you and vice versa, Richard replies. Perk of bonding with the Huskies.
I blink, staring at him, then Lana. Oh, well, that explains his level of awareness out there. Still, we didn't do anything. She just slept with me. In bed. Asleep.
Mikito laughs as I splutter and Richard snorts, obviously not buying it.
Just ignore him, John, Lana says, adding milk to her cereal. He was always like this, even in school. After a while of us working on our respective breakfasts, Richard says,
Snow didn't stick.
When will it? I ask, frowning. Seems a bit early for snow, really.
Chocato,
Lana chuckles, and Mikito and I share confused glances.
It's mid-October. We'll start getting snow regularly from now on, and it could stick at any time. About time for us to be changing tires, really.
Oh. I blink, then consider the gardens, the farms where plants are still growing. How about the farms?
Shields,
Mikito pipes up, shaking her head slightly in bemusement.
One of the hunters realized that if you use a low-grade shield, the shield blocks airflow but lets in light. Makes a great greenhouse.
Lana nods, lips thinning slightly.
The council should have made the purchases already, but the decision has been held up in committee.
Richard makes a face and I find myself echoing it. Bureaucrats. Lana sees our faces and rolls her eyes, putting the bowl aside as she stands.
I've gotta go. Try to remember to go shopping for more food, will you?
Those are her last words to us before heading out. Richard stares at his sister before turning back to me.
You guys really didn't do anything, did you?
Not a thing, I say.
Damn.
Okay. He frowns, opening then shutting his mouth as he decides better on commenting further. Mikito snorts as she puts her chopsticks down on top of her bowl.
Dungeon, what's the plan?
More people. A lot more, I state firmly.
Who?
Richard frowns, holding up his fingers. We can ask Rachel, maybe the last brother. Aiden will come, and if we schedule it right, Amelia too. That's seven.
Not enough.
I shake my head, remembering our ignoble retreat. Mikito and I might be able to take two or three of those each, but the first room alone had over 20.
The Carcross group?
Richard asks. I frown, shrugging.
Maybe, but they've got their hands full with the bosses around Carcross.
Jim,
Mikito adds, fingers laced together in front of her.
His group can come.
No. They'd be seriously outleveled.
Richard exchanges a glance with Mikito before he says,
There's the Circle of Ravens, or, well, Bill's group, if you will.
No, I don't trust them, I say firmly, and the pair nod.
Just making sure I asked, Richard states. How about the Yerrick?
That might work, I nod slowly. We could add your sister, too. Between your pets and hers, we'd nearly double our frontline fighters.
Richard makes a face, shaking it slightly.
No. Too dangerous.
You should ask,
Mikito points out. Richard's face scrunches up in distaste before he nods.
Fine. Fine. So you going to ask the Yerrick, John? I'll talk to Amelia and Aiden. Maybe we could visit Carcross today. Help them out for a few days. Might make it viable for Jason and Gadsby to come.
I want to ask Jim,
Mikito adds, interrupting us. Mikito, hear me out. He's the strongest hunter among the non-grouped, and he's in his low 30s. If we bring him and maybe a couple of others, we could have them level with us, Mikito says. It'd be like a training run, just at a higher level.
Richard looks at Mikito, seeing the mulish expression she has, and shrugs his acceptance. Only if the Yerrik agree. More people means more of a split in credits and experience, I add, to help pacify Richard.
Okay.
Mikito accepts my codicil without complaint. Sounds like we've got a plan, then. I stand up, stretching. Give me a ride to Zev's. I want to check on Saber first.
Can do.
Richard dumps his bowl into the sink with a clatter while Mikito gently places hers aside. One quick spell later, and we are on our way.
Zev, I wave to my mechanic as I walk in. It scrambles away from the hulk of a Hummer it's busy converting to greet me. From beneath the Hummer, a pair of lizard feet are sticking out, and muffled cursing can be heard. I ignore it for now, waiting for Zev to answer the unasked question.
Mostly done, Adventurer John. Nanobots finished rewiring circuits, armor is mostly replaced. I've added 2 of the 3 weapon upgrades and was waiting on the third, but your saber can be taken off now. Has been good to take out for weeks,
it adds, guiding me to where Saber rests. I touch my bike, my first real prized possession in this system world. I had outgrown it, the combination of the high-level areas in the Yukon and my high base stats making the mecha less and less useful. Yet I couldn't let it go. It was everything I needed when I first started, and just discarding it had seemed wrong. So I put in more credits than I should have upgrading it. I'd switched out the internal systems entirely. Along the way, we added a nanomachine upgrade for the base system. I'd used a hard point and soft point for that, but now Saber could self-repair anything but catastrophic damage. Zev had ripped out and replaced enough internal systems that we actually managed to create an additional hard point for the PAV, which meant I had space for a few new toys. Specifically, I got myself a new portable shield generator that ran off its own mana battery and some heavy-hitting missile launchers. I'd considered getting beam weaponry, but since the shield was also linked directly to Saber's engine, in a pinch, I could increase the shield regeneration. Of course, doing that meant we'd drain the battery faster, which is why I went with external ammunition that didn't need the mana battery. Armor, after our little tussle, had upgraded itself to add a 25% resistance to electrical damage. I was loath to swap the armor plates out entirely, knowing the nanomachines would eventually add even more resistances as we encountered tougher enemies. So long as the mecha lasted, at least. I smiled slightly, pulling up the stats for Saber. Omnitron 3 Class 2 Personal Assault Vehicle, Saber. Core, Class 2 Omnitron Mana Engine. CPU, Class D Xylic Core CPU. Armor rating, Tier 4, modified with adaptive resistance. Hard points, 5, 5 used. Soft points, 3, 2 used. Requires neural link for advanced configuration. Battery capacity, 120 of 120. Attribute bonuses, plus 35 strength, plus 18 agility, plus 10 perception. Inland Type 2 Projectile Rifle. Base damage, not applicable, dependent upon ammunition. Ammo capacity, 45 of 45. Available ammunition, 250 standard, 150 armor piercing, 200 high explosive, 25 luminescent. Ares Type 2 Shield Generator. Base shielding, 2000 HP. Regeneration rate, 50 per second unlinked, 200 per second linked. Kylan Type 4 Mini Missile Launchers. Base damage, not applicable, dependent on missiles purchased. Battery capacity, 6 of 6. Reload rate from internal batteries, 10 seconds. Available ammunition, 12 standard, 12 high explosive, 12 armor piercing, 4 napalm. While I'm busy with the mecha, Zev skitters away to get back to fixing up the Hummer. After pushing out from underneath the vehicle, Tim stands and stretches, his dragon scales covered in oil and grease. He looks happier than he did the last time I saw him. For that matter, thinking about it, I haven't seen him at all. Tim, I nod absently to the ex-Ravens Circle member. I can't say I like him, but I don't dislike him either.
John? He walks over, long tail swinging gently behind him. Picking up Saber?
Yeah,
I smile and rest my hand on the bike again.
She's one heck of a machine, Tim says.
Then I blink, realizing if he's been working here. I grow guarded, wondering what he might have told others. Then again, I wonder why I'm being so damn paranoid. Even if people do know about her, it's not as if we've not all gained numerous levels in the last few months. She's no longer an automatic trump card like before, so people stealing her should be significantly less of a worry. Tim sees my face and works to reassure me immediately.
Don't worry. What happens in the shop stays in the shop. Can't work here if you don't understand that rule. If I told you some of the things people have us fix...
You'd be fired,
Zev chitters.
Anyway, not as if I've got anyone to talk to these days,
Tim says grumpily, and I raise my eyebrow. He gestures down his body.
White Horse has gotten a lot more speciesist since I left.
Even to you? I say.
Yeah. Seems like if you aren't a vanilla-looking human now, well, you aren't good enough to be human.
Tim growls, pointed lower and triangular upper teeth flashing in the light.
They didn't complain when we were saving their asses or fighting the monsters for them. Now that they think they're safe, it's you're scary. You're not human. You're a freak.
Sorry, man, I say.
It's just so messed up, you know. I always thought dragons were cool. And when the system came, well, I got a chance to be a dragon. Well, dragon kin.
Tim sighs.
We were the cool kids for once, you know. Nick and the rest of us, we were the heroes. But now I'm just a freak again.
Do you regret it? I ask. Tim shakes his head firmly.
No, I still love being a dragon.
He grins.
But I'll be damned if I fight for them anymore. The idiots can go twist on a stick.
I nod. I can understand his feelings, the way the ingratitude can eat at you. I almost make the offer for him to come with us, but he seems happy here working on the vehicles. We don't really need another person.
Anyway, I gotta get back to work. And John, sorry about Luthien. I knew about her and Kevin, but they were my friends then, you know,
Tim says. I get it, I reply, waving him back to his work as I trace my hand down Saber. Old grudges. They seem so distant now. So petty. I still don't want to deal with Luthien, but really? What's a little betrayal among all this blood and death? It just seems so small. See you, Tim. The dragonkin raises a hand in goodbye without turning around, and I sit on Saber, smiling slightly. Right then. Time to talk to Capstan. Then we're off to Carcross. Capstan was gone by the time I managed to make my way to their compound, so I left a brief message for him to contact me. By the time I finally met up with the group, Ali is back and refusing to answer questions about where he has been. We make our way back to Carcross, taking the Klondike Highway and passing by the cutoff as we drive down the highway. Autumn's certainly here, with many of the trees having shed their leaves and patches of snow on the mountains. Unfortunately, with the lack of upkeep of the highway, driving is fast becoming a pain. I wish I had the credits to add in a hover mode for Saber. It'd certainly make a less jarring ride. If we want to continue hunting in the winter, it'll probably have to be our next major upgrade. When we reach Carcross, I'm impressed by the changes. They've pushed back the forest by another kilometer and added a deep trench right in front of the wall. Along the walls, smaller beam rifles have been added, each of them tracking along a smaller axis while a few watchtowers watch over the entire wall with significantly larger weaponry. Behind the wall, a single squat building, where the old First Nations Community Center was, towers over everything. Looks like they'd upgraded their city center to act as their final fallback point. We're greeted by Jason, the teenager still dressed in jeans and a plaid shirt, but looking older and more mature. He's even taken to growing a beard, which surprisingly suits him. Instead of greeting us with a usual smile and shout of joy, his greeting is much more subdued. Richard takes over describing the dungeon and what we need while the rest of us take a moment to stretch our legs. I spot Makito walking over to a group of hunters and she makes carton after carton of cigarettes appear to their delight. I guess someone decided that earning a little additional income by bringing nicotine over wasn't beneath her. As I look over the city, I blink, staring as I finally get a good look at the guards on the wall. I'd noticed new faces,
but I hadn't really twigged until now. They look pretty human for the most part, but from this side, we can see the rest of their bodies, and the oddity of their height comes through pretty clear.
Ollie, are those dwarves?
I try not to point, but I'm comfortable staring. After all, it's not as if they can see where I'm looking underneath my helmet.
Galactic term for them is Gimsar. But yes, it's your world's dwarves,
Ali replies.
For once, the mana translation didn't mess up too badly. Everything you know about them is correct. Hard drinking, hard fighting, short humanoids. On their home planet, they built their cities underground, mostly due to the much longer and colder nights. They aren't particularly well known as smiths, though, not any more than any other sentients. The clans hire out as mercenaries like the Hakarta. And yeah, Gimsar and Hakarta don't like each other, mostly because they're always fighting over the same contracts.
By this time, Mikito has returned and is eyeing the group as well. She does so blatantly, but I figure that's fair. More than one dwarf is giving her a look over. Of course, their regard is much more lecherous, but I figure Mikito can handle these guys. They're all around our level, after all.
Dwarfs?
Yep. Other than not being smiths and mostly acting as mercenaries, Ali says the mana translation worked, I reply, and Mikito nods.
Mana translation.
The term that Ali has used to explain why so many creatures from our mythology are making an appearance. Basically put, because mana often collects in small amounts in non-system worlds, the system can send packets of information into the consciousness of the sentients of those worlds to prepare them for eventual initiation. Unfortunately, due to the low level of mana in those worlds, it's quite common for the data packets to be significantly corrupted. Thus, the mana translation problem and why certain myths only appear in certain parts of the world. Most packets are too fragmented to be picked up by the entire populace. Richard comes back, looks at the dwarves, and I have to repeat the explanation. He nods before gesturing out of the city.
Jason says he'll be happy for us to hunt around Carcross. We're, of course, welcome to stay. However, he and Gadsby won't be leaving the town. In fact, Gadsby is taking a page out of our book and is busy training up more people.
I frown. So who do we have?
Rachel, Aiden, Amelia, and the three of us, Richard answers immediately. We really need the Yerrick.
I find myself nodding with Mikito. I almost consider going over to see if I can wheedle Jason a bit to come with, but that's probably a bad idea. He's stepping up, trying to fill in the gap left by his mother's death. Asking him to join us on a dungeon delve when he's turned us down already is just selfish.
Okay, let's hunt,
Mikito says, before suiting actions to words and climbing into the truck. I blink, startling at the abrupt transition before I sigh and roll Saber around. Lady's right. We might as well do what hunting we can. After a brief discussion, we decide against hunting for meat and go for the kill, looting for system-generated items without picking up the corpses, outside a few bodies that I dump into my altered space because they're too good to leave aside. Instead, we focus on clearing as large an area as we can. Funny thing, lightning squirrels are really easy to deal with when they aren't backed up by a boss and you've got a trio of fast-moving savage dogs. We even managed to track down a pair of other bosses. The first Orel kills, dropping from the sky to latch his claws around the boss's hairy ape-like body and lifting it into the sky. The ape creatures the boss was directing become a lot easier to deal with without its leadership. We're in the midst of mopping them up when Orel drops their leader's body into the group, splattering them and us with its innards. I have a feeling we're not getting a Christmas card from Jane Goodall this year. The second boss fight is probably one Mikito never wants to be reminded of. Snow geese are evil, nasty, vicious creatures, and that was before they were evolved by the system. We end up standing back to back as they literally try to shit us to death, their waste being not only toxic to the touch, but to the smell. I was fine in Saber, completely sealed away from the smell. Richard had a resistance he gained from his class. I guess when your puppies are the size of a pony, their excretions are spectacular too. Mikito spent the entire fight puking her guts out with Bella curled up next to her, though. Luckily, I could throw Saber's shield over her body to ensure none of the waste landed on her directly while she was incapacitated. Richard and I spent the rest of the fight using our respective firearms to cripple the birds, bringing them down low enough for the puppies to finish them off. Aurel and Ali took care of the boss in the air while we dealt with the minions. The aerial dogfight was rather amazing to watch, since we really couldn't do much to help. The boss might be tough, poisonous, and fast, but it didn't stand a chance against Aurel once its minions were whittled down. All in all, it took us over a day and a half to get everything sorted and roll back into Whitehorse. When we get back, I find Capstan a bit grumpy with me. I guess leaving a note asking him to speak with me and not being in town for a few days could be considered bad manners, but he gets over it pretty fast when I tell him about the dungeon. When I explain how I found it and why, he gets grumpy again until I point out that Makito and Richard were my original party. Yeesh! You'd think a guy who's nearly 10 feet tall and can bench press a tank would be less sensitive. At the end of the day, though, he agrees to come along. I can understand that entirely. The experience bonus from completing a dungeon the first time, along with the first completion bonus, is significant. I understand that motivation. After all, I'm so close to hitting level 30. After that, it's all about coordinating our schedules. Chapter 14. All right, listen up, people. I know you've all heard this before, but try to pay attention and hold your questions till the end. I find myself standing in front of the group, giving the last-minute briefing before we head into the dungeon a couple of days later. I'm fully armed and armored, including being in Saber in full mecha mode. We don't know how big this dungeon is. We don't know how many floors there are. We don't know what kind of monsters there are beyond the Fraxen. We do know that the Fraxen are mid-50s to low-60s and swarm. When I stop, Ali takes over, waving. A small image appears in front of everyone with the shop purchase data on the Fraxen, though he summarizes for the slow readers.
The Fraxen are highly resistant to poison, extreme cold, and high temperatures, and yes, carbon dioxide poisoning. Fire and ice spells will be less useful than normal, and their chitin requires significant force to pierce, so crushing attacks are best.
He nods to the Yarrick, who have switched out their usual axes for giant hammers.
Beam weapons work, but are again resisted.
I wave at Capstan. Capstan is leading this group. He's got the most experience at hitting dungeons, so he'll be in overall command. Nelly is second, then it's me, Tahar, Richard, Makito, and Aaron in that order. If you aren't out yet by the time Aaron is dead, I'd recommend running like hell. There are a few grim laughs at that. Rachel and Aiden look a bit green, while Amelia seems unperturbed to be left out of the list. I wait for everyone to calm down before I look around the group, my voice hardening. This is the toughest dungeon we've run across, and it's quite possible we might not be able to clear it yet. There's no shame about backing out, and if anyone feels like it's time to pull out, we'll do so. This isn't a game. We get no respawns. The humans, of course, nod at that. The Yarrick mostly look confused, but nod along to the sentiment. I nod to Capstan, and he takes over.
The Redeemer shall be on point with Tahar and Makito behind him. The dogs and I shall be the second line, while Nelia and the mages and Richard are behind. Lastly, Amelia and Aaron are our rear guard. Listen to our orders. Keep your spells and weapons to individual targets unless we tell you otherwise. Questions?
Amelia raises a hand.
Who's the Redeemer?
That'd be Boyo,
Ali points at me, sniggering. I sigh and add, it's a title.
Oh.
Amelia nods and falls silent. Seeing no other questions, Capstan nods to me and I turn and walk into the dungeon entrance. Walk into one limestone cave, you've walked into them all. This wasn't even that large a limestone cavern, about 20 feet by 30. Stalagmites and stalactites abound, though most are pretty small, leaving the cave relatively barren looking. At the end of the cave is an exit, which we'd explored and were run off from such a short time ago. On our right, halfway down the cave, is an as-yet unexplored passageway. Once I'm inside the first cavern, I open up with luminescent bullets to ensure everyone can see without a problem. We'd debated trying to sneak in, but with such a large group, there really wasn't a point. While the amount of light some of the bioluminescent moss in the caves provides is enough for the Fraxen, it definitely isn't for us. Capstan snaps an order to Aaron, who moves immediately to the unexplored entrance and drops a small device in front of it. It's a mini drone that acts as a combination alarm, weapon platform, and shield generator, and will let us know if something tries to flank us. At least, that's the theory. Our rear secure, he waves me forward, and I get moving. I'm watchful, but relaxed, Ali having headed deeper in spirit mode to keep an eye out for potential trouble. I see the vast glow of red dots in the cave down the passageway, but there's no movement yet. I raise my hand, reporting in, and Capstan gives me a short nod as we set the first part of the plan into motion. We wait, since it takes time for the drones to get in position.
John?
I turn, looking down at the hand that rests lightly on my armor, unnoticed. Having gotten my attention, Rachel drops it.
Thank you for trying.
I flinch slightly, glad she can't see my face beneath the helmet. I consider Rachel quietly for a moment. Her eyes are still sunken and haunted. There's none of that self-assurance I saw in her when we first met months ago. I have to ask. You up for this?
I think so,
she replies, her expression firming.
I have to be, don't I?
I don't have time to reply. The drones are finally in place, waiting. Capstan gives a nod, and Aiden pulls an earthen wall into place around the entrance. It's enough to alert the Fraxin, and the swarm begins to converge on us. Last time we managed to make it about three-quarters of the way down the first passageway before they swarmed us. If they'd waited till we were actually in the cave, we'd have been dead. I watch the dots stream toward us on the minimap, wondering when Ali will talk and getting more and more nervous. The first Fraxin are already in the tunnel entrance, all of them clustering around and trying to get to us when he finally sends word. No! I trigger the drones with a savage grin. These are modified firefighting drones, and instead of water or fire-retardant foam, they're carrying acid. Nasty stuff that sprays out behind the drones and onto the horde of clustered monsters as they rush us. I almost believe I can hear them scream as the acid eats into their armor and skin. No real time for celebration, though, because it's a short corridor and the first of the Fraxin reach us quickly. The Fraxin can only fit three in a line, and that means their greater numbers aren't as useful. As the monsters rush us, I focus and swing my sword using Blade Strike to send a screaming blue wave of destruction into my enemies. The Blade Strike shatters carapaces, forcing the monsters to pause long enough for the second strike to injure and cripple. Their friends don't wait, clambering over the injured monsters and continuing their headlong rush. Tahar lets loose a moment later with his beam rifle on full auto. Bluish-white energy plays across the fronts of the monsters, cutting apart shells and cooking exposed flesh. The monsters rushing us don't care, charging through the beams and my next blade strike as if they are nothing, intent on killing us.
Wall!
Roars Capstan. The mages finally act. Rachel is faster, the ice wall she'd held ready to cast slamming into existence 10 meters ahead of us. Aiden backs her wall up with one made of earth, suddenly cutting the vanguard from the rest of the swarm.
Charge!
Capstan barks, and Makito moves. 1 second she's next to us. The next, she's ahead of Tahar, whose rifle is finally run out of charge and stabbing her polearm into the first monster. The puppies flow without hesitation into the gap that she creates in the line, Max flickering ahead to join Makito in her attack. Another monster attempts to flank her, and Max bites down hard and rips off a leg before flickering back and away from the stinger counterattack. Bella charges in, grabbing the stinger in her system-enhanced teeth and shattering the appendage before retreating backward. Shadow can't fit in behind the pair, but that's okay, since its shadow can. When a claw swings at Bella, it gets caught and held by the shadow as the puppy flexes its power. Tahar rushes down his side, literally running up the side of the wall for a moment to get around the puppies and get to his own target. Capstan takes a much more direct route, launching himself over the front line, his hammer held between both hands. Blocked, I have no target, so I step backward, letting others get a view while I check on my drones. All three drones are undamaged, but their payload is empty now. They've taken to their secondary orders, which involve sticking as far up on the ceiling as possible at different locations through the cavern. This gives me a wide view of the cavern while drawing the angry Fraxin to different spots. Sadly, none of the Fraxin are dead from the acid alone, but many of those caught in the overlap of the acid spray look much the worse for wear. Damn it! We were hoping to reduce their number significantly before we had to finish this. Turning my attention back to the fight in front of me, I see Makito caught in a claw and smashed into a wall. The monster is crushing her while Bella is kept back by the other claw. The only good news is that Makito managed to lop off its stinger before it caught her. As I raise the inland's barrel on my arm, an earth spike shoves upward and spears the monster, forcing it to open its claw spasmodically. The distraction is all Bella needs to get in close and rip the offending claw away from its body, ending the monster as a threat. As the earth spear retracts to give us room to fight, I rush forward, jumping to close the distance. There's not much clearance, so I've got only a moment to judge what is going on before I land. Capstan is fighting two of the monsters, easily holding his own, while Tahar is smashing apart another monster. The other puppies have taken a series of wounds, including a yellowish deep gash down Max's side that I don't like the look of. I land and open fire with the Inland, switching to full auto for a moment to spray the monsters, and those behind, projectiles, drilling through armored carapaces and leaving gaping wounds. Unfortunately, it's only seconds before I run dry and have to get medieval. After a sharp whistle, the Huskies pull back, letting the mages land a series of fast, targeted spells at the remaining monsters. Their attacks give the melee fighters a moment's respite, enough for most of us to kill our remaining opponents. A healed Makito flashes forward to back up Capstan, sliding underneath his swings with ease. We have a few seconds to savor our victory over the vanguard before a claw punches through the earth wall. Here we go again. A good 30 minutes later, we've had to retreat all the way into the original cavern. Not because we can't beat the Damfraxen, but because the bodies keep piling up such that it gets difficult to fight. We got into a rhythm halfway in, getting comfortable trading people in and out so that no one ran out of stamina. A lot less of a problem for me and Capstan, but the others had started to slow down as the monsters kept coming and coming. I even had to light up the entire room once with a lightning strike, dumping nearly the entirety of my mana into the monsters to give us a break. Beautiful thing about electricity, most creatures really can't move much when you're frying them. In the end, no one died, and we finally get back into the first cavern. We take the time to rest and loot while Ali and our drones are sent to scout out the exits we found. He can't go far, not in a dungeon, but between him and the drones, we begin to build a map of the dungeon and the threats we face. Capstan? I wave and send the slowly growing map out to him. I couldn't get the drones too far from Saber. The high level of mana in the dungeon meant that the signal broke down too fast. Technically, the drones all have onboard software that could map the entire dungeon for me, but that's assuming they don't run into anything particularly tricky. The big Yerrick stares at the map before he flicks his hand, sending it to Nelia and Richard, while I call the drones back. They're close to their limit, and if we're going to make a decision about what to do next, I want them here.
We doing door number 1, 2, or 3? Ali intones, pointing at each dark passageway in turn.
As he speaks, he lights them up with different colors, although I'm pretty sure that's only for me. The large cavern that we rest in has been set up with additional lights by the Yerrick and mages, giving us a base we can fall back on if necessary. Following my example from our previous escape, Richard has even taken the time to mine the exit with claymores and an anti-gravity mine so that if we need to run, we've got a bloody distraction. Capstan shoots the spirit an annoyed look before he points at door number 2. The moment he does so, Aaron runs over to the passageway to pull the guard drone back into his inventory. I grunt, mentally making a note to pick some of those up when I can afford it. As I walk over to the intended passageway, I pass by where Amelia and Makito quietly chat.
Did Una get mad at you?
Makito says.
Yeah, she really hated me leaving. Says that policing is safer than adventuring any day,
Amelia says huffily.
She doesn't want to understand that I have to level to stay ahead of the idiots.
I know,
Makito replies. Then I'm past the pair, staring into the darkness. I fire a single luminescent orb, watching it light up the passageway. I know why Capstan chose this one. For one thing, there's actually enough clearance for the Yerrick to stand straight. Not much chance of that in option 3, and option 1 has a tendency to get tight across the shoulders. Still, I have a bad feeling about this.
Why aren't they coming?
Aiden mutters nervously. Aaron hisses at the mage and he shuts up, but
but I don't blame Aiden at all. He's just saying what we're all thinking.
Where we stand 100 meters from the next cavern, the Fraxen should have heard us by now. They should know we're here and they should be charging us. Instead, they're doing nothing, just sitting there. I can't tell for sure with the low-light vision of the drones, but there's something wrong with the way they look. Something I can't exactly put my finger on.
Redeemer, send Ali to rouse them.
Capstan growls finally, and I nod, sending the mental request to Ali.
You know, Boyle, I can get hurt. Goblins, other spirits, spells, elementals, all those things can injure me.
Ali grumbles, beginning to do his light trick.
Yeah, but not Fraxen, right?
I point out and wait for a few more seconds.
Anything? Well, a pair of the bastards looked at me and lobbed something, but none of them are moving,
Ali says. I report the results back to Capstan. He lets out a growl, his eyes tightening. I don't much like it either. When monsters stop being super aggressive, it means they're smart. Smart monsters are bad. Smart monsters are dangerous. Finally, Capstan taps Tahar's shoulder and waves him back. Capstan walks forward till he's shoulder to shoulder with me.
The Redeemer and I shall proceed first. The rest of you, stay back.
Great. Just great. I walk forward with Capstan, both of us doing our best to be quiet, even though it's probably utterly useless. Just because I have the best armor and a ton of health, I get to be the guinea pig. At least Capstan is with me. When we reach the entrance, the Fraxen all turn toward us and my mini-map blooms. Creatures that were hidden before, that ignored even Ali when he was doing his light show move, suddenly appear. Capstan and I just stare at the Fraxen, and they back at us, neither of us willing to move. I'm wondering how the hell we missed this, how the monsters could avoid detection by Ali when Capstan mutters,
67. Huh? There are 67 Fraxen. Levels are the usual, but they are red,
Capstan says, the Yarrick seemingly perfectly calm. His tone, his professionalism pulls me back to the present, and I actually look.
That's a lot, I frown, then mutter to Ali. Any data on the color?
Incendiary, don't use fire,
Ali says after a moment, shaking his head.
Sorry, Boyo, they fooled me. Something in here was hiding them from me.
Why aren't they charging us?
I growl softly. Capstan shakes his head. He jerks his head upward after a moment, his lips snarling.
They're flanking us. Eren just calmed. Two of our drones are under attack. We have to retreat.
He steps backward and freezes as the Fraxen rustle.
Jesus, these guys by themselves could probably rush us all and finish us. They have to flank us too?
I don't think they want us to leave.
I eye the monsters, my mind flicking over options. We move, these guys light us up and charge. We don't move, their friends sweep in behind us and take us, and then these guys will light us up anyway. We need them frozen, held here, which means... Oh, hell. On my word, Capstan, run.
Redeemer.
Capstan growls softly, and I shake my head. No time. You can get my friends out, and I've got the mecha. I'll light these guys up with everything I have, and you get running. I've got a few tricks up my sleeve, so you just get my friends out, I say, my voice strangely calm. I'm not angry, surprisingly. What's there to be angry about? What is, is.
Honor to your family,
Capstan growls. I nod, recalling Ali to me and dropping the drones back into my inventory. No need for them to get wrecked. From the corners of my eyes, I see the group already retreating, backing off to where we came from, but they're going to hit opposition any moment now. I mentally issue a command to the suit, letting it inject every single potion of regeneration into my system before I replace them via my skill with instant heal potions. I'm as ready as I'm going to get, which means... now. I trigger the missile launcher, dumping the full load in one wave. 12 high-explosive missiles sent direct into the cavern. The moment I make my move, I see Capstan sprinting away. I take a short hop backward again and again, even as the Fraxen open fire, tiny balls of plasma flashing from their stingers. Then my missiles land and explode, and the blast wave is enough to pick me up and throw me backward onto my butt. Saber's already cycling and reloading, but I don't have time for that because the Fraxen are rushing the entrance. Seated, I bring my hand up and open up with the Inland, lobbing armor-piercing rounds downrange as fast as I can target a new monster. 5 seconds, and I'm dry. Lightning next, a spell that I've used so often the spell formations are second nature to me. I feel myself reaching into it, altering the structure of the spell in a way that has nothing to do with the system, enhancing it with my affinity, even as Ali ducks over and helps. We throw electricity and death down the cavern hallway. All the while, plasma lands around us, burning through armor and circuitry in search of my flesh. We bring death, and for a time, it's enough. The missiles killed a bunch. The electricity strikes stun and eventually kill the Vanguard. When the Vanguard dies, I wait a moment for the monsters to clump together again before I loose another wave of missiles, backing off a bit and hunkering under the blast wave before backing off further. I repeat the shoot and lightning process once more and start feeling lightheaded, my mana down to nearly 15%. Pain as plasma sears my skin, the temperature in the cavern so intense it cuts through my battle haze. Without my resistances, without Saber, I'd be dead already. Saber whines and cycles, attempting to fix itself and load my weapons, but there's only so much it can do. I reach into my inventory with a thought and drop a portable shield generator, activating it with a flick of a hand before I run away. It lasts for 3 seconds before it blows. By then, I've dropped a second generator. Outside of the punishing heat, the second generator lasts 7 seconds before the plasma bolts tear the shielding apart. 5,000 credits each time, all gone. I can't even mourn it as I hit the spot where the team planted the chaos mines in the vain hope I could get there. Ali's zipped right ahead of those, not wanting to get caught when I release them. I don't want to be there either. Chaos mines are powerful, but cheap. You never know what you'll get.
John!
Ali screams and flashes the map up to me as we take the next corner. I see it. The others are caught, stuck in a bottleneck, unable to push past the monsters that clog the exit. I stick my head around the corner, back the way we came. The chaos mines go off, and maybe we're lucky, but they rip open a portal and tentacles of lurid yellow and pink stick out, grabbing and pulling in Fraxen. There's something in there, something that even with my mental resistances, I can't see, can't comprehend. Or maybe it's because of the mental resistances that I can't comprehend what's in there.
Shield up! No!
Snaps Ali. I comply. Then suddenly, my eyes are filled with notifications. Level up. You have reached level 30 as an Eretran Honor Guard. Stat points automatically distributed. You have 6 free attribute points to distribute. You have 6 class skills to distribute. I've been saving my points, my class skills for a rainy day and for level 30. I might not have much time to use it, but I'll be damned if I don't see what I can do. I slam my points into my class skills and feel the ice-cold rush of knowledge and pain that hammers into my body as the system grants my wish. Chapter 15. I come back to my senses in time to see Saber's shield fail, to see the damage icons, feel the heat radiating from the mist and blocked plasma bolts, to taste the dryness in my mouth and the smell of cooked flesh and ash. I come back to see the Fraxen storming me, and I grin. My friends are behind me, fighting their own battle in a desperate attempt to escape. I need to buy them time. Time enough to break through. Time enough to live. I find myself grinning, laughing as pain courses through my body, as new knowledge and abilities resolve themselves in my mind. I flicker, 1 second crouched and the next behind my attacker, spinning to punch my sword through it. I step and kick out with Saber, mecha and system-enhanced strength, picking up the Fraxen and sending it bowling into its friends. Even as the monsters fire on me, their shots explode against my newly created soul shield. The translucent barrier of mana absorbs the damage and covers both Saber and me. I duck to the side, grabbing one of the Fraxen by its tail and lifting it, using its body to shield me against more attacks while I wait. Time. I'm fighting for time. I feel my soul shield flare, cutting off plasma blasts that slip around my improvised shield. When the Fraxen stops twitching, I send it flying into its buddies, Then I step sideways, giving myself a few moments to open up with the inland. I shoot to cripple, even as the soul shield flares red.
Corner!
Snaps Ali. I trigger blink step and cut across the corner. I snap the shield off the moment I'm away.
Sticky grenades!
I pull.